Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Jason Cutter here with another episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. And in this conversation, I'm going to speak with someone who's got a different approach regarding the call center environment, different from me anyway, and I'll kind of explain as we get into the conversation what was so interesting and revolutionary about the stuff that he does. But today joining me is Rich Kahn from Anura Solutions LLC. And so Rich started Anura for the simple fact that there was a lot of ad fraud in the business, and he wanted a solution, and then designed and created a solution from the technical side to improve performance by exposing bots, malware, human fraud, all these things. And this is all coming on the track record of success he had with other companies and things that he's done and awards that he's won. And really where this comes into play is anyone who knows me knows that I'm all about performance-based leads. It's about buying data, buying marketing, buying leads, something to feed to your sales machine. What I didn't realize is how much fraud is out there in the marketplace. And so Rich is here to talk to me and talk to us about that. Rich, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Thanks for having me on today.
So I mentioned a little bit in the intro, it's very interesting. I actually came to find out about your company, believe it or not, a few years ago. I didn't even know this thing existed. I didn't even know there was fraud detection. And don't tell anyone, but I didn't even realize there was fraud in the lead generation process. For years, I just figured, hey, if you buy a lead and you buy data, and that's Bob Smith and Bob Smith's info, then it must be Bob Smith who filled out that lead. And then I realized I had one of your team members enlighten me to it. And I went, oh my gosh, I didn't know this was a thing.
Yep. Look at it this way. Like, we deal heavily in the lead space because, again, leads are perfect for performance-based marketing. And I ask this all the time. Every time I talk to somebody who does lead generation, oh, I don't have any fraud. And I go, how do you know? Because they have to fill out a form and I don't pay someone to fill out that form. So someone fills out a form, I know it's real, I pick up and make a phone call, I said, great. Do you ever come across, you know, you call somebody on the phone and they say, I never filled out your form? Oh yeah, it happens all the time. I'm like, that's fraud. And we find that pretty much on average around 25% of the time. So, they try to explain, like, why is it happening? I said, well, look at it this way. Let's say you're driving impressions programmatically that ultimately are going to lead down to generating that form. So yeah, you're not paying for the form, but you're paying for the impression. So the fraudster drives a lot of impressions, but they know if they drive a lot of impressions and no clicks, somebody's going to shut them off, whether it's programmatically or some marketing manager is going to shut them off. So they generate and falsify clicks. There's click fraud, right? So now they're generating clicks that are fraudulent just to make the campaign look good. But any good marketing person that's managing a campaign down to performance knows if it doesn't come down the path and do its action, and in this case, fill out the lead, they're going to shut down that source and, of course, shut the gravy train off for the fraudster. So they ultimately know so many impressions has to lead to so many clicks, and so many clicks has to lead to a filled in form. They'll come in. Typically, what they're doing to get around all the systems that are out there is uses human fraud forms. You can license them around the globe for like $9 an hour. They're cheap. And what they'll do is they'll follow the correct path that you designed for them. They'll fill out the form using some information that they got somewhere, which, you know, all the information out there is public nowadays. They'll get the information, put the information in, and they'll fill out the form, and they'll put Jason's information into the system. And most lead generators will check behind the scenes after the form is submitted. Does Jason's email address and phone number match what we see in the back-end databases? They do. Well, great, we have a valid lead. They pass it off. Somebody picks up, makes a phone call, and Jason says, I never filled out a form. And you're right. So they use human fraud forms for a couple reasons. One, the bot detection that's out there is not going to catch them. And number two, a lot of people like CAPTCHA. So they'll throw up a CAPTCHA puzzle, which, you know, 30% of the time the average human fails, but they'll throw those CAPTCHA forms up, which again, the human on the other side is going to pass that. So everything looks and feels legit. Or, you know, the old original one, check if you're not a robot, and he's not a robot, right? So all this stuff passes through, except the fact that now some client picked up and made a phone call to Jason, who didn't give him express permission to call them, which means you now just broke TCPA compliance, which is something that everybody's trying to avoid because the lawsuits are flying like crazy. In fact, I'm actually going to a compliance palooza in Vegas this month. So I'll be out there just, you know, as in the audience. And I've got a couple of people out there that I know and a few of the lawyers that are going to be out there. So just have some fun just to finally get out of town. But outside of that, so if you think about it, you broke TCPA compliance. If you make enough calls and you're a big enough brand, you're going to have enough people concerned with where you got their information. So you got a brand reputation issue. It takes longer to call people that aren't expecting your call. So you're going to spend more money in your call center resources to get the person who didn't fill out the form, which is never going to convert. And then finally, you paid marketing to drive that all that traffic that led to that lead. So you're hurting yourself in a variety of ways and putting yourself at a legal risk, all because fraud got past you and you weren't aware of it.
Well, and as you're telling that story, and it's similar to what I heard from someone on your team about 2.5 years ago now, my instant thought is I'm reflecting back as a sales leader, and I've always been in charge of sales and marketing when I've been in organizations, and thinking about how many times salespeople weren't converting the leads they were given, and where I would talk to them and say, hey, what's going on? What happened? Oh, that was Bob Smith, but he said he never filled out a form. And my response generally was, well, maybe you came across as a telemarketer and triggered him to not want to admit that he filled out the form. But we know that was Bob Smith because we have his information. And so, you know, generally my thought was, okay, well, you're weak, or you just come across salesy and it's your fault because, you know, that's not a thing. And I will say, I feel slightly bad reflecting back.
Have you let anybody?
I never fired anybody. Because
okay, so that's good.
I never fired anybody and said, "Hey, you know, get up and pack your stuff and walk out right now." But you know, I'll tell you honestly, I just always assumed for years that it was them and they were not good at sales. That's what was causing it.
Yeah, and that's a big problem because it's. I mean, you have a situation like that, but like I said, there's lots of other situations that arise because of that. And, you know, maybe you're buying traffic from a given source and all of a sudden you're getting more and more of those and you're just banging your head trying to figure out, I got the lead. How is this not, you know, and at the end of the day, you're just paying for it, you know? So we talk to clients all the time about this kind of stuff. And then I had a very interesting one that you and I have not spoke about before that I'd like to share with you guys. Because it's these fraudsters are now taking it to the next level. In fact, I think I have a Forbes article coming out probably next month or two that'll talk about this. So you guys kind of get the sneak peek. Essentially, what happened is they came to us and said they were vetting us out, billion-dollar company, big brand, and they said we found four. Now we scanned thousands of leads for them. We found four leads that you believe were bad and you marked as fraudulent, yet they were payable. They were actual real leads. And I go, okay, talk to me. What's a real lead to you? So we went into the details. They actually had somebody listen to the phone calls. They listened to the phone call and they said, yeah, I'm calling you. I'm calling Jason because of the form you filled out. And he goes, okay. Went through the pitch. Sounds good. Set me up with your rep. Did the transfer to the client because it was a warm transfer to the client. Client got on the phone and did his pitch. I said, that's great. And he goes, and actually we've caught a few others like that. How could you guys be so wrong? You claim no false positives. I go, okay, well, first off, let me look at those and find out what's going on. So I pull all the data together behind the scenes and I go, okay, this is interesting. You know, it looks like it's coming out of, you know, Minnesota. I guess the leads were coming out of Minnesota, whatever, based on IP address and everything else. But our analytics clearly told us it was coming out of India. And I said, there's no way this device was in the US at the time this call was made. So we started digging a little further and I said, I think I know what's going on. And I was right. What's happening is, so instead of just grabbing Jason's information because, you know, it's cheap and it's free on the internet, I can find your information, you know, through Zoom Info or any of these vendors that are dirt cheap, pop your information in, they took it one step better and they bought aged leads. So 60, 90 day old leads that, Jason, you did fill out a form, not today, but like 3 months ago. Let's say you're in a market for a mortgage. So you may have done all your stuff and just for whatever reason, never purchased. They took this name 90 days later, put it in the form. They call you and you're like, yeah, I do remember filling out a form. You know, it wasn't yesterday, but it was months ago. But everybody knows in the space, if you're buying age data, the value of those leads are so small because either you're dealing with people that are non-buyers or they're just a low conversion rate. So I said, do me a favor. Take a look at the leads that came through that we marked as bad compared to the leads that we marked as good. What is and their normal closing ratio? They're in the insurance space. So their normal closing ratio is about 15%, I think. Off the top of my head, I think their particular process is about 15%, which is basically from the time they hand a lead over to a client till a policy is written. So we call it 15%. The ones we marked bad had less than 1% conversion rate. So I said, so now what's happening is I know I'm right. I know it wasn't the person whose information was there, but you're paying a premium dollar to have a lead generated today that was really an age late lead that was probably worth pennies on the dollar. He went back, did a lot of research, and came back and he goes, impressive, you're right. Because they're taking it to the next level now. Because they know if you call up a lead and they say, I didn't fill out a form, that's a telltale sign. They're starting to pick up on that. So fraudsters now want to be one step ahead. You say, okay, fine. I'm just going to spend pennies on the dollar, buy age leads and pop them in there, and you'll never know the difference. But the data is your friend.
So they're filling out the forms in order to drive and create those leads using the age data. So hopefully it goes through. That is really wild. So then what's the solution for this? Obviously, there's the solution that you've built, right? And what your company does. But I guess mostly, where does this kind of fraud detection fit in the process? Because I'll tell you, when I first heard about this, and whenever I think about it, I think of the fact that are marketers really going to want this in between them and the buyer of the leads or the data? Because it's going to basically kill off, let's call it 30% of their revenue, right?
Well, yes and no. So whenever I talk to a company, I always tell them, look, first thing we want to do is get a benchmark. Because like I said, if you're like everybody else, 25% of your traffic is fraudulent, and you're a large company, small company, it doesn't matter really. If I shut off 25% of any company's revenue, it's going to hurt. In some cases, it could be devastating. So the first thing we do is get a benchmark on where you are today. So let's say we're at 25%. So using our analytics, the step is to identify where the bad traffic is coming from. So you can start to reduce that, like work with the sources, tell them where it's coming from so you can start to reduce the fraud while going after the guys that have good traffic and asking them to send you more traffic so that you're increasing that. The idea is to maintain or increase your overall traffic volume because that's how you get paid while reducing the fraud so that the ROI of those campaigns start to go up without affecting your bottom line.
Got it. So that makes the most sense, because when you put it that way, if I'm a marketer, publisher, whatever, I'm the one that's on the selling side of the transaction with this leads and data, then I'm getting it from some other source, or I want to know what's clean and valuable so that I'm selling it, which would then make my customers happy, assuming an abundance and unlimited or nearly unlimited supply of things being fed to me, right? Where I can choose and I can high grade where I'm getting it from. So I'm selling what's best. And then, you know, there's the best chance possible for my clients who are buying from me to get a good ROI, which means they're happy and then I'm happy.
Well, what happens when the client's ROI goes up?
Hopefully they buy more. Hopefully they appreciate it. And no matter what, they're not going anywhere.
Right. Demand goes up and then everybody makes more money except for the fraudsters. And that's okay.
Yeah, I would say that's totally okay. So how challenging is it from your perspective, having done this for a long time with your business and just in the space in general, to get somebody to admit that they might have a problem? That's the first step, right, of the 12 steps is admitting you have a
problem. Yeah, actually it's not.
No.
It's a little easier than that. It's hard to get somebody to admit they have a problem. It's easier to get to see if they have a problem. So a lot of times we want to go in and do a benchmark. You know, we do a free trial like every other company does to see how much fraud do you have. because once you peek under the carpet and you know it's there, now you got to do something about it. So it's a lot easier for somebody to say, wow, I just found 25% fraud on your network. What do you want to do about it? Well, the average person wants to do something about it. You know, they don't believe they have fraud and they're not going to admit to have fraud. But as soon as you can actually show them, and that's what we always tell them, hey, if we light this up and find out you have no fraud, first off, you'll be the first. But if there's no fraud there, then at least you know what you're doing works. It's peace of mind. But if we find something, then we can at least come up with a game plan to solve it for you guys. Because again, if you have a sizable amount of fraud and you eliminate it, your client's demand is going to grow and you as a company will grow. So this is what we're all about, is helping our clients grow through the analytics of fraud.
And I love that approach. I was actually just making a note because I think that's so valuable, where it's not, I have to convince you that you have a problem. Let's see if you have a problem. And let's use the data, your data, to show if you have an issue. And if so, what that means. But it's not me telling you, it's not me trying to sell you, it's not me trying to convince you, like a snake oil salesman, that you have this problem and I have this perfect remedy. Let's just see. And I know for me, I do that a lot with companies, because a lot of times they don't want to be told they have an issue with their sales team or they need better training or whatnot. But we just look at the data. Maybe you have an issue, or where is there some issues we can look at? Yep. So I love that approach. So beyond the like getting that decision made, where does the technical piece, like the technology piece, come in? And what are the challenges? Like if there's a call center listening to this and they go, this sounds great, Rich. I'm sure we'd love to put something in place, but I don't have an IT team or a tech team or the staff to like manage this. I'm already struggling with my CRM and my dialer and my data, and it's a mess.
Yeah. A lot of times we're actually building for integration, because again, we're in a weird space, right? Our decision makers are the marketing guys. They're the ones who are trying to optimize and build it. But yet the technology has to be installed by somebody theoretically technical. And you always have that clash, right? Because what ends up happening a lot of the times is we find in companies, people will run, like the marketing guys will run to the CTO and say, hey, we got a problem with fraud, solve it, and then walk away. And the guy's like, I'm already up to my neck and stuff. I have no time for this. So they'll look for a solution like us to help make their life easier. Then the integration is easy because I'm dealing with somebody who knows code. But for the other type of people, where I'm dealing with marketing, we're trying to make the integration as simple as possible. In fact, we've built a Google Tag Manager plugin. We've got a WordPress plugin. We've got these plugins that you don't have to mess with code. You just pop a couple, you know, switches and pop in your, you know, your key that we give you, and you're up and running. So it's as simple as that. I mean, and if you really wanted to deploy the code on your site, you can deploy it using any type of tag manager or any type of just copy and paste. If they can do Google Analytics, they can do us. It's the same situation.
Got it. Well, and I love that, because I've been a part of so many organizations where there's either some tech team or not enough. And the thought or idea of concept of bringing in another solution that requires some kind of integration, A, who's going to do it? And then B, I've also seen many times where you add one more piece of tech to the house of cards that's kind of cobbled together, and then, you know, it breaks something over here. So it's good to know that, you know, there's some easy solutions. It's not like this pain, this developer pain.
You brought up a good point. We actually just did a case study with one of our clients who's been with us like 3 years, insurance vertical again, just because it's a big vertical. So insurance is one of the biggest verticals, because almost everybody needs insurance, right? So it ends up being one of those big ones when you talk about like mortgage refinances. Well, not everybody's got a mortgage, you know, so then it reduces the pool. But again, insurance, big place. Anyway, so we did a case study with them. So we're actually, it's the first case study. We're going to have actually a video part of it and everything else. And the owners, the guys who started the company, are all developers. They're like me. They know how to write code and stuff like that. And they go, they started to try the process themselves and quickly realized they just did not have the time because they're trying to grow a business, right? You're trying to focus on a business, and fraud is not something that you can do part-time in a business. It's something that you've got to focus and dedicate resources to, a lot of resources to, focusing on it. And one of the things they also recognized, which was neat, was that no matter how good a solution they were able to put together in-house to be able to focus on what they do, they were only able to see their data, mm-hmm. when they type into a company like us or however it works, they get to see all the client's data. Like they get to benefit from all that data that's being pushed in, and that makes life easier for them. So, you know, like anything, when you're trying to figure out patterns and recognize new levels of fraud, the more data you have, the better it is. And by getting together with a company like us, that's a big benefit. So I can't, we're looking forward to pushing out this press release. We haven't done one in probably about a year. Just haven't gotten around to it. Haven't had the resources to do it. Now we do. So hopefully we'll be doing those more regularly.
Hey, it's Jason here. We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment. But first, are you ready to help your inside sales team close more deals? In my experience, there's a certain percentage of your team that acts more like order takers than sales professionals. The first step to creating a scalable sales team is to equip your reps with the right mindset and proven strategies to transform them into quota breakers. To build a team of authentic persuaders that will crush their goals, email jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com or go to www.cutterconsultinggroup.com. Well, and that's always that debate when it comes to solutions. Is it the buy or build, right? Do you buy something or pay someone, you know, to do it, or they already have that solution, or do you build it in-house? Do you have the resources and the expertise, which I think is interesting. So let's shift just a little bit, because here you are, right, with tons of experience, but you're in this interesting spot where data leads are coming through, and then there's your solution that's looking for fraud and pushing through the best, most valuable stuff forward that's the most real and authentic. In that space, you also get to see the perspective of a lot of companies, which is why I wanted you to come on here, not just to enlighten people about this whole fraud subject, but because literally you have insight through your watching your customers who are buying performance-based marketing and then doing something with it, right? They're all selling with that. What is it that you see as the biggest challenge, not just pandemic related, but just say sales in general related? Like, where do you see companies struggling and or succeeding on the sales side in business right now?
Okay. So on the sales side, some of the biggest areas that I see, and it depends on the business, right? If you're B2B, versus B2C, very different models. You know, inbound is always going to be a solid method of sales and marketing. It's when you can't scale that fast enough to grow the business, which we all hit that spot very quickly, is, you know, because that inbound strategy just takes time, and outbound strategy is something you can light up and scale up. So if you're doing an outbound strategy, there are lots of tools in the space and calling, dialing platforms that people can use. What they're struggling with is it takes a lot more phone calls today to get somebody on the phone. That's because COVID hit. A lot of people are working remote, and a lot of companies have adopted that philosophy moving forward. So now when you're calling the office line, there's nobody behind the desk, and not everybody gives out their cell phone. So if you're doing, let's say if you used to call 100 people and get a handful of people to talk to, now you call 100 people, maybe you get one person. So they're struggling on that side. And just like us, we still do a lot of outbound, just because people don't know there's an issue and we have to bring the message to them. We do a phenomenal job inbound, but it's never enough to really sustain and grow the company at, you know, the levels that we're trying to do it at. That's one area that I hear everybody struggling with. And I also hear big and small companies, the same thing, is they're struggling with attracting new talent. You know, they're trying to out there hire new people. You still got people that are, you know, that are able to collect the unemployment. Why not take the summer off, you know, before it ends and enjoy the, you know, heck, if I could sit home and relax, why wouldn't I? But I'm a business person. Yeah. I'm a workaholic. So here I am at the office, right? We've been at the office since June of last year.
Nice.
So.
Okay. And then what about like trends that you're seeing, or if you have any insight or hear anything from your clients, just in what they're doing on the sales, like sales processes, anything different, any consumer buying behavior? Again, I know it's not directly related to what you do or what you provide, but you also have this, you know, insight and window into a lot of different businesses.
We see a lot of different verticals. And when COVID hit, we were concerned about how it was going to affect our business. And we had a phenomenal year, so it didn't affect us. But in that aspect, we did see different verticals kick up, different verticals kick down. So like some of the ones that really took off, like, okay, vacationing, tanked. You know, everybody, very few people were vacationing. Yeah. There were still a few, but so if you were in that industry, you were hurting. But then the home improvement industry took off like like a rocket. I mean, it just, everybody's like, all right, well, if I can't vacation and I'm stuck at home, I might as well fix this thing that's been bothering me, or, you know, add a pool on or add an extension, or, you know, I might as well invest in my home if I can't do my normal stuff. So those are the only two things that I really saw from our perspective, because a lot of our clients are very generic in nature. So they'll deal a lot of different verticals. A lot of them are publicly traded, so they'll have different areas of the industry that they cover. Actually, we did see some increase in moving. Some of our moving clients started seeing spikes up to now and still seeing that. But I don't really have a lot of insight to the vertical specific, because a lot of us are generic. Gaming, actually, we have some big gaming clients. They took off like crazy because more people are at home, you know, and especially when the winter hits, let's jump on the computers and start gaming, or it's too hot outside, let's game, or it's perfect weather outside, let's game. You know, it doesn't matter. It's always an excuse to go gaming. So we saw that industry take off a lot, which was great. But yeah, so I mean, that's the general stuff that we saw. It really was vertical dependent, a lot of what we saw. We didn't see additional struggles because most of our players are buying paid marketing, whether it's through tier one search and social. They're buying, affiliate-based marketing. They're buying programmatic-based marketing, all that kind of stuff. It seemed pretty stable from the clients that we discuss, either stable or growing, just because we saw an increase in growth and usage over our network. So it just assumes that more people being stuck at home, more people spending time online. So in general, we saw that kick up. Of course, that was the death of, you know, thousands of restaurants across the country. Was almost the death of the buffet, which I love. You know, unfortunately, actually one of our local restaurants opened a buffet, and I'm like, I'm a buffet man, but I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's pretty much what we saw there.
So you mentioned it earlier, you know, TCPA violations, right? Which is the legal side of calling, not calling, having permission, having consent, and all the various rules and laws that in that, and then everything else, you know, compliance wise. With that, plus what you do, plus what you see in the industry, what do you see as the near future kind of trends or important things that call center owners and leaders should be mindful of, let's say, through the rest of 2021 going into 2022?
It's literally compliancy, compliancy, compliancy. It seems like the biggest term. I'm part of the Leeds Council board, and we're actually changing our name, but it's all because, again, it's not just about leads. It's really about compliancy and all aspects of compliancy. So when you're, you know, the Consumer Protection Act is really getting more broad stroke than it needs to be. It's there with an intent to protect people from getting, you know, spammed on and called and harassed, basically, is really the term. But at the end of the day, businesses find different ways of doing business. So again, it comes down to every time they say, okay, let's do, you know, ringless voicemail drops. Let's do, you know, text messaging. Let's try all these really crazy things that are just pushing the envelope. And then government comes in and says, well, we're going to stop this. We're going to stop, you know, just slashing things. And if you breach those, you know, there's some hefty fines behind the scenes, like with TCPA, it's like anywhere from 500 to 1500 per phone call. You know, so if they walk into a call center and they've got a 100-seat call center, you know, that potential fine is huge. You know, so it's about being compliant. You know, if any of your listeners haven't heard of Leeds Council, go to leedscouncil.org. It's a great resource on compliancy and, you know, what the changing laws are doing like that. It's a good blog that you can go to and pick up a lot of information. But there are, like I said, it's what I see from my seat is probably the compliancy is going to be the most, you know, because it's the most unsexy part of the business, but it could be the most devastating if not followed. So.
Well, and I think that's super important. I know a lot of companies, they know they should do that, but they just either don't know how to start or don't want to invest the money. I've also seen other companies who just outwardly would rather put money aside for the fines and fees than to be proactive and do things the proper way within the rules. You mentioned Leeds Council, which is a great resource. I joined earlier this year and actually just completed as of when we're recording this early July, finished went through all four cities of the industry impact event, which was really cool. Great to meet lots of people.
Made all four?
And I did. And it was awesome. It was, a, it, it was a fun event, and obviously compliance was a lot of it. Marketing was a bunch of it. Being pretty much the only sales guy there, which, you know, marrying that compliance side with, you know, how do you be compliant, and how do you do things the right way, and then how do you scale, it was definitely good. And can't promote that along with you, the Leads Council initiatives, just to keep everyone safe and then also represent people. I mean, I think that's one of the things too, is there's a lot of people in the call center industry, people who are hopefully listening to this, and everyone feels like they're on their own and they're not represented well, and it's the government versus everybody. And so there's, you know, some people out there who are trying to fix that. So it's not just like, you know, what happened with the government versus Facebook. And then, you know, Facebook has the money to fight it, but most others don't.
True. Yeah, I was actually supposed to be at those events myself. And unfortunately, we had people starting those 2 weeks. And I was trying to make one of them, and I just couldn't make it happen.
I know. Definitely missed you. I expected you to be there. I thought that would have been awesome. It was a good opportunity, too, to meet people in person that only met online. So I think I agree, compliance can be huge, especially with, there's lots of states, depending on, again, when people are listening to this, there's states like Florida that are enacting their own, you know, referred to as a mini TCPA rules. There's all kinds of things in place that, you know, companies should really be aware of. It's just going to get more and more difficult and more painful if you're not compliant. What do you see as you seeing any trends or anything that you have on the radar as far as technology, either like on the lead generation side or on the sales tech stack side that you see coming up, emerging anytime soon?
I've probably spent the last quarter focusing on sales technologies, you know, to help us accelerate our growth. And there have been some very different, interesting ones. Like, you know, you've got some of the ones out there that do like crowd dialing, where they'll have, you know, six or seven people dialing for one of your reps. So this way they can get through that, you know, get somebody on the phone faster. I saw that as something that looked good, but I don't know, with COVID hitting and people still not at the office, it doesn't work as good as I think it used to. I've seen some tactics where, you know, a lot of more inbound stuff, inbound tactics, like instead of doing the chat bots and moving to a live chat environment, I've seen that starting to surface a little bit, because again, the live chats seem to have a higher conversion rate than anything else you can put on your site. Of course, how do you staff a live chat group for, you know, 24/7, you know? So again, a lot of them will do overseas and they'll have very basic training. So those are some of the basic technologies that I'm seeing when it comes to the sales side. When it comes to the lead side, it really is, there's a lot of stuff coming out about compliancy. It's like ADA compliancy, you know, TCPA compliancy, you know, DNC compliancy, like all these different things that are coming out to help you with compliance. And it's one of those things you just don't want to look at or think about, but at the end of the day, you have no choice. It's something you have to deal with, otherwise, you know, be dealt with, you know, on your behalf for you. So other than that, I haven't really seen too many other things popping out that caught my attention.
Yeah. And you mentioned the ADA compliance. I hadn't really heard much about that until those industry impact events. And Jason McKee was at all of those events talking about it and really helping people understand the impact, both from a legal and a fine standpoint, right? If you're not ADA compliant on your websites, but really what that means from visual to audio to images to, you know, usability, even without, you know, being able to see somebody navigating with mouse and keyboard. And really, again, not just from a compliance fine negative penalty side, but from a opening up your website so that you can have more traffic, which leads to more leads and more conversion, more clients, more revenue. You know, a lot of times I think people look at this compliance conversation, which you're a part of, is a negative and it's just going to hurt business. But when it's done right, when you look at it with the right perspective, it can help business, because then you're opening up to the right people, if you will, instead of, you know, kind of shooting yourself in the foot sometimes with the wrong people, like you mentioned.
Well, it's like anything else in the world of the business, what you're trying to focus on is growing revenues and reducing risk and liabilities, right? So compliancy is trying to reduce risk and liabilities, and you try to increase your sales. So you try to do that balance so you can grow the company. And unfortunately, it's just one of those things where there are a lot of lawyers out there. They're always looking for the next prey, and they will take the law, bend it a little bit to make it fit their case, their voice, and what they're looking for. So if you can protect yourself ahead of time, that's probably your best solution. Getting dragged into court, they always say the lawyers are the only ones that ever win that, right? So it's one of those situations where you want to avoid that as much as you can.
So final question for you on your side. So you've grown your business. You have a bunch of people now and part of the company. You've been through many ventures in the past and grown and scaled. What would you attribute your success to with building successful companies and on the team side? What's your secret?
So I've had a lot of companies over the years, all with varying degrees of success. I was 28 years old. I started up a company. 3 months later, I had a $60 million deal on the table. Went to close on it on April 28th of 2000, and April 14th, the dot-com bubble burst. So I've seen that pie in the sky happen, get everything all together, and then just lose it all. So I've seen that happen over and over. And I think what has kept us focused is the fact that so far every company that I brought on has been bootstrapped. So you pay attention. You're forced to learn how to pay attention to every dollar. Even in the companies that were making a ton of money and money was really an issue, I still, just from being trained like that year after year after year, focused on carefully where I invest every dollar. Because today you have it, maybe tomorrow you don't. You know, and you want to make sure that you're investing it where it makes the most sense. So that mindset has definitely helped. Team atmosphere has always been through trying to, right down to the office. You can't tell by my office, but we're in a commercial building and we built the inside like a home. So we got wood moldings, not the rubber stuff. We've got wood doors, not the metal doors. You know, we built it. We've got a lounge. We've got a 50 style kitchen. You know, all that stuff leads to camaraderie and keeping people together. So like, you know, we celebrate birthdays together. You know, during the summer, we'll take everyone back to my house and go swimming in the afternoon. You know, have a little barbecue once a month, every 6 weeks. Maybe go bowling during the winter or find, you know, we've gone axe throwing. That's something new that's popping up. You throw some axes around. That's not an HR nightmare. But there's all these things that you do to try to keep people together. But it's a catch-22. Because when it comes time to let somebody go and you have that close-knit crew, it's tough. But, you know, yeah. You got to be the boss. And you got to do the job. And if they're not doing their job, it's time to let them go. And that's the hard part.
Yeah, I think it's important to build that culture, support that culture. And then what I have learned and I've also seen is, you know, if you're at the top and or you have to make those decisions, is to be one step removed from the culture, support it and let it nurture, but then also be careful that you're not the one partying with the employees and then the next day having to make tough decisions. So yeah, that's great.
That's easier said than done.
It's super easier said than done because it's tough because you just want to be, really what it comes down to is most of the time, I know for myself, just want to work with people that I enjoy. And then if I enjoy, I want to hang out with them and work as a team. It's tough when somebody has to get voted off the island if it's just not a good fit. So, you know, it's a different conversation. So I know that you guys have a lot of resources. And I know that the best thing for people to do if they're interested in finding out more about you or Anura is to go to anura.io. It's anura.io. I know that I've looked at the site and you've told me there's literally just hundreds of resources on there, videos, white papers, blogs, ebooks, all kinds of stuff, that there's just an overwhelming amount of things that people want to look at. You know, what's out there, what might be true for them, what you've seen in the industry. Where else can people reach out to you if they have questions, if they're curious about it, or if they just want to see that, back to that question, if they have an issue in their data?
They can reach me at rich@anura.io. They can catch me on LinkedIn. I usually post on a daily basis something, whether it's a quick video or a poll or picture of the barbecue going on or something crazy just to see what generates the most interest in the audience. I'm probably connected about 16 or 17,000 people on LinkedIn. So it's nice to see, like, you know, certain things varnish very few views and interactions, and then others are just like off the chart, you know? So it's neat to see what raises the interest versus what doesn't. So, but LinkedIn or email is the easiest way to catch up with me.
And I would say that since we've connected on LinkedIn a while ago, and then in the last few months, especially, I've really feel like I've gotten to know you based on your LinkedIn posts that aren't just all business, you know, the personal stuff, which is awesome and fun. Well, Rich, I appreciate you being on here. As Rob Seaver, head of Leeds Council, would say, you scare because you care, which is his big motto. Hopefully people are scared the right amount regarding the fraud in their data so that they can do it, so that they can win and help their teams win. But I appreciate you coming on here and sharing all this info with everybody and spending some time with us today.
I appreciate the time. Thanks a lot.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at CutterConsultingGroup.com.